Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, today it's a little bit different because this is going to be an hour of mom power. Yes. We ladies who just, well, it's what makes the world go round, right? Yes. We're the ones that go through all of these wonderful experiences that, well, nostalgia sometimes weeps in. And did you notice I said the word weep? Yes. We have our challenges as moms and, by golly, I think every generation of women does. Well, I want you to know that we have a delightful guest, Joan Anderson, who has been on the show before. And Joan has written so many things about angels. But this time, she really outdid herself because she wrote a book called Mom Knows Best. These are classic stories that I guarantee you every woman is going to relate to. Joan, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's great to talk to you again.
Well, it's so much fun, but I was so surprised when I got this book. Oh, my goodness. And I started sharing it with some of my friends because I said, does any of this resonate with you? And they started laughing. They said, oh, I can tell you stories. And then, there's just this wonderful thing that we women do. We just say, let me tell you what I went through with my three-year-old, or let me tell you what happened when I was this, that, or the other. And it is so true because the world of motherhood is unlike anything else. And it just has all kinds of personifications to it. But why did you decide to put this book together for moms?
Well, for a long time in the 80s, I'm probably really dating myself here, but I worked once a month as a guest columnist for a magazine. And they wanted funny things. And, of course, I always said to them, my life is not that funny. You know, we have five children and a lot of bills. And they said, that's just what we want. So I wrote those columns and put them away in a drawer. And then one day, one of my editors, now this is very current, within the last year or so, said to me, it says in your bio that you wrote humor at one time. They didn't find me very funny, I guess, but they said, what was that about? And I told them that in cleaning out my files, I realized that I had the entire history of my children as these monthly columns, and that I had enough to make a book for each of them. Maybe I didn't know what form the book would take, but it would be involving my children. Well, I started, and I realized, no, you're narrowing it way too much. This is not about your children. This is about everyone's children. Mm-hmm. So I took all those things and put them into, it turned out to be a two-book series because there were so many of them. And I just kept handing the manuscript out to people and saying, do you think there's a point to all of this? And their faces would light up a little as they read, because then they would say to me, I thought I was the only one.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
You know, you have this sticky stuff in the back of your refrigerator that you don't want to go near because you don't know what it is. Well, you know, I would just ignore mine. But people started talking about their sticky stuff, and I thought, this is so universal. Why don't we do this?
Yes, I just threw out some sticky stuff this morning. Yes, I can totally relate. Do you notice how it has a life of its own? It seems to develop its own body form, and it crawls.
Oh,
it
does.
And it's put a plastic lid on. Eventually, that lid starts inching up. Yes.
Really?
I don't think anybody else, but you and I have this happening in our refrigerators.
I tried to make a little solution out of some of these so that they wouldn't all just be whoa. And and one of them was particularly acceptable to the women I was trying this out on, and that was going out to lunch. Now, you know, for a lot of us, you don't go out to lunch very often because either you don't have the money or you don't have the babysitter. But in this book, I was hoping to kind of give, you know, some lightheartedness to the readers. And so I talked to them about the fact that my friends and I never missed once a month lunch. We always went. And it was, we played bridge sometimes and we did other things, but our children were usually throwing up or, you know, not having a very happy night. A lot of times we had to cancel things, but my gosh, when that monthly came around, we all went and had lunch. Mm-hmm. And it was just our time to be by ourselves and laugh. And, you know, I had it in the book, like the woman in the book, who is me, I guess, is following her friends as they go through the restaurant, and she's saying, "Who's that man? Why are we behind him?" And people say that's the maitre d'. And she doesn't understand that there are no, you know, nothing for her to do. She cuts the meat of the man who's eating next to her, and all sorts of things like that, because she doesn't know how to behave in a restaurant. And people were just hysterical laughing at this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I guess what we need is more contact with one another to really just mm-hmm. confirm.
I think that is so true, Jill.
Mm-hmm.
I
really and when we true. Cut it out, or we wait until, oh, gosh, I'll wait until things are better, or you lose so much in that. You really do. You have to put yourself first at least once a month.
At least once a month.
Mm-hmm.
You had a cup. I'm going to just throw out some of the things that you have, and I can relate to this one portion, and you have the chapter titled "The Best Years," and you have ... and a big question mark.
Yeah.
And in the sentence you say, no matter what anyone tells you, these are not the best years of your life. And you go into listening to older people, a young woman when she has her screaming two-year-old, and the older individual will get all misty-eyed and will say, "Oh, Jesus, these are... oh, just appreciate them." You're thinking, all you can do, my God, is just survive the day. You just don't know if you're going to make it. And you feel guilty, as you said, "I can hardly wait for preschool." I can't tell you how many young moms I have heard say that. "Please, we've got to go to school." You're kidding? We've had strikes here at the schools, and the parents just go ballistic. What do you mean you're having a strike? They're supposed to start school.
Yes, absolutely. When you look at them, you think that their faces are downcast because they are missing all this stupendous education, and really it's just because they were hoping to be able to watch Oprah, you know,
that's true.
Or listen to you.
This is something, when you really get down to real life, it is just interesting. And you say in your book, you say, "As one battle-scarred veteran, I advise you to forget your dreams of sanity and organization." And these points that you have with descriptions, I just adored. One, learn to run. It demands you have to have a level of physical fitness to keep up with kids. And that is not a joke. And anybody has dealt with, I know many of my listeners have, dealing with a child that, you know, they're wonderful for the first 2 or 3 months if they're not colicky. They're so cute. They just burp and dribble and drool, and you pat them on the back, and they give you a big burp, and then you lay them down, they go to sleep, and that's great. Well, if you're lucky, that may last 3 months, if you're
mm-hmm.
lucky. And then they discover that they have legs, and oh, my Lord, and they discover anything and everything else. And then you say, get used to crumbs. Oh, gracious, how many of us just go crazy. We say, "I just cleaned this up." There's a funny feeling that women have when they have done a wonderful job of cleaning house, everything is in order, and then someone comes through, either the kids, the dog, or the husband, and you look at it and you said, "Well, it lasted for about, let's see, what was that this time? 3 minutes, 45 seconds, and whatever." It's amazing. And this is what you do. You have to get used to that.
Yes, you really do. These things are not important in the long run, but at the time that we're working with them, they seem to loom very heavily over us. Like, this is my job, and I should be able to make it work. And, of course, I don't, because no one told me there would be days where the biggest achievement you had was maybe keeping the towels on the towel rack until the guests came over.
That's right. And then you talk about the section, and there's one I'm going to get to that I just think is priceless. You say, forget about answering questions that start with why, how, come, what, and where, because it's ad infinitum. They will drive you literally nuts. Have you seen a commercial on television where there's this family that's going into a car dealership and they're going to buy a new car and they've got this little boy and he's standing there. He's upset. What's that? What's that? What's that? What's that? What's that? What's that?
No, I would kill him.
This is goodbye, you know, when he's handing the keys to the parents. And it's interesting. My husband interpreted that last word. He said, oh, that he made a wonderful sale. I said, no. He's saying goodbye to the family, handing him the keys or taking the kids or getting out of his space. And it's interesting how perspectives are there. You say, don't become too attached to material possessions. I can remember with my daughter, I used plastic plates. I would not have any of my fine china out because I knew it wouldn't survive. So I went down and I bought cheap plastic plates.
Mm-hmm.
So, and sure enough.
And really, is she a nice, normal person today?
Well, I don't know. Is there such a thing, children? I'm not normal. I don't know. Is there such a thing as a normal human being? I really am waiting for a good definition on that one. I haven't found that one yet.
You know, I think in my case, I learned to ask myself the question, will this matter in 10 years' time?
Mm-hmm.
That was the first thing that used to pop in my mind. And it was fine because you could be talking about a 1-year-old, but you could also be talking about a 15-year-old.
Oh, yes.
The point is, in 10 years, is this going to have had any effect on the kids? And if it hasn't, then just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can actually cover everything. Their moral development, well, that's something you have to start with right away. The kids used to steal pennies out of the fountain in the corner of our shopping center.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was theft. And so whenever we would leave, I would say, all right, frisk them all, take away, you know, all the coins and throw them back in the pool, and that was it, because these don't belong to us. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they're 3 years old. They don't understand everything. But, you know, you can't wait until they're 9 or 10. So that would matter in 10 years' time. But, you know, dyeing their hair purple for some dance at school, as long as they know where to come after the dance, you know, mm-hmm. and they're not leaving permanently, you know, I say let them wear their purple hair.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really like this little bit that you had on husbands. And this, I think, those of you listening, ladies and gentlemen, I don't think you want your wives to do this. If everyone's done this to you, you will never, ever forget it. And, Joan,
no.
You talk about how your husband thought you just sat around and you didn't do anything all day long.
Oh,
so
that's
great. You decided, I love this story, you decided, I'm not going to do anything. Well, if anybody's going to cringe at the thought of 5 kids running around the house and you not, you know, doing what you have to do, keeping things tidy, correcting. You just had mayhem, but you decided, you know, you were just going to do nothing, and you left wet diapers wherever they fell. And,
yeah.
I mean, it was just, this was hysterical. I'm reading this, and he comes home to this, and he said, with all the sweetness in the world, because he just was stunned. The house looked like it had been hit by a hurricane.
He said,
and you said, ask me what I do all day, dear. I just thought I'd show you. He didn't say anything after that, did he?
Well, he said, has there been an explosion? That was the first thing he wanted to know. And then he said, what is this? And I said, well, you keep asking me what I do all day, and so I thought I would show you. I keep this from happening. That's really all that I do. But
mm-hmm.
You don't want that explosion, so therefore, I have to be on my toes. It really was terrible. One child filled the bathtub, and I thought, I wonder if I should intervene in this. And he put all the winter coats in the bathtub, and I thought, well, it's worth a cleaning bill because my husband will be out of his mind. And he was. But, you know, he didn't say anything about it. After about a week's time when his blood pressure, you know, came back down again, he never again asked me what I do all day. And sometimes you have to demonstrate things like that. Words are not enough.
That is so true, because you just assume. Men just will assume. that's, yeah. that's it. Now, I really started chuckling when you started talking about the differences in your children. And you have a chapter of wondering where they came from. And mm-hmm. I shared this with one of my friends, and she was just in stitches because she could totally relate. But you said you assumed that there had been a mix-up in the maternity ward, and you'd one day find your real child probably in a remedial biology class.
Right.
I mean, because your children, you were, they were so different. And you go, how did you get to me? What is it? We don't have this in our genetic,
Isn't that true,
where'd
though?
Where did you come from?
Yeah. I don't know where they came from, except that this one boy, the one that we felt probably was a mix-up, he was awfully cute, so we thought we'd keep him until his real parents, you know, decided that possibly they would like to trade with us. But this child would do scientific things, which none of us, including my husband and I, knew anything about. And one night he made a human heart replica, I don't know what you would call it, for the dining room table. He thought it would be a real interesting thing that we could all talk about. We talked a lot at dinner time because I just mm-hmm. felt that was a good way to get all the tension and everything out. And so he spent a lot of time doing the heart, which, to tell you the truth, I mean, when he started in explaining about the left ventricles and things, I really had to leave the table for a while because I wanted to encourage him, but, you know, who cares? You're 7 years old. You know, you're not going to have a heart attack. And so I just, you know, went on pretending to be interested, which is one big thing yeah. you have to do a lot of is nod, you know, and go, oh, wow. But we thought that we had gotten him past the point. We were proud of him, and this heart really was unique. And the next night, he was working on little pounding sounds so that maybe we could get a little, you know, da-da, da-da, da-da. And my husband
yes,
said, I'm not eating here.
Yeah,
I'm not,
wanted to make it real.
Not eating here, none of us. So we all left, ate in the kitchen, and that was about it. I said, come on, you know, you've shown us how smart you are. And, you know, we never did have to give him back, and I'm really glad we didn't. But had I known at the time, I might have, you know, helped him a little bit more with this because he was really into it.
Well, he reminds me of something that your story reminds me of something that I did, and I was a teenager when I did this, and I'd gone into biology class. And of course, every parent will have a story like this to share about their kids, probably.
Oh, yes.
But I remember we had dissected an eyeball. And I just thought that was just the most exciting thing I'd ever done. And there's your lens inside the eye, which is absolutely magnificently beautiful when you see it in real form. And I can remember bringing that home and talking about that at the table. And I think that my story about the dissection of the human eyeball was about as interesting as
it Oh, my was. Goodness. What
so
did your parents do?
I think my father turned a little green and just
mm-hmm.
ignored me. But I have to tell you, I sort of smirked inside to myself and I thought, gotcha. You can't
yeah.
do what I can do. So I think we kids, you know, when we're kids, you do all kinds of things. And there may be some people that are just absolutely magnificently wonderful when they're growing up and they never put a frog in anybody's bed or anything like that. Or
don't
bring
how boring they
the
are.
Or a heart, you know, or something like this. But it really does. It makes it, you have all of these wonderful stories. And I love the story that is about disciplining the children and how you and all the mothers, you titled your chapter, Love Thy Neighbor. And you said, we mothers shared a tacit agreement. If the crime of any of our children was minor, we'd look the other way or retreat to the kitchen to peel parsley until our nerves had stopped quivering. If the deed was of major importance, however, heavy artillery was called in the form of five fathers who sentenced everyone, innocent or guilty, to a term of hard labor cleaning basements. God, we
yes.
need more basements. We need more basements, Joan. And I
yes,
think we need to employ
it.
The Marines sometimes.
Oh, that was it. That, with those basements, we could kill a whole afternoon. Where are the kids? I don't know. They're downstairs somewhere. And
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
that's funny.
And you have a quote at the end of that chapter. It really is. It's hysterical when you can talk about it and write about it, but you don't have to live it anymore.
Yes.
I mean, that really is. Because raising kids is a lot of work.
It really is.
It is a lot of stress, a lot of tension.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be on guard. You can't assume anything. And boy, I really have empathy for young parents today. When I'm at the airport, I just got back from being on a business trip to Alaska, and I looked at the moms that
yes.
were lugging their babies and doing all of this, and I go, my word, you must work out with weights every
mm-hmm.
single week just to keep those muscles up to handle these great big bulky carriers. And then you have to lug them, you have to carry them, and then just before you get on the plane, then you've got to drop them and put them to the side, carrying your baby,
yes.
your diaper bag, and all of your other paraphernalia. You really need to have an attendant. I wonder why they don't provide those. Why don't
you know,
we
I was thinking
with a built-in attendant?
I was thinking that sometimes, you know, when you go into a restaurant and they ask you smoking or non, my husband and I, traveling as grandparents now, older people, have an idea that we should have, you know, children or non, and put the little ones way in the back so that they can make all the noise they want and nobody is, you know, rolling their eyes and sighing and everything else, because it's just what you said. I don't understand how they can manage to go from one end of the country to the other just with all the things they have to keep in their minds to remember who gets
mm-hmm.
fed at what time and all the rest of it. And I think sometimes because it's available, people think we need to use it. But I know it's very hard not to see your mom and dad or, you know, to skip a summer without coming in. But sometimes those trips and all of that is so hard on a mother that she probably doesn't get anything out of it at all, except once again taking care of her family in an environment that isn't as good as the one she has at home, because at least she knows where everything is at home. You know, I'm kind of big on don't go unless you really feel that you're going to have the energy, because, you know, you can. We have Skype now, and we have other things that we can use to keep in touch. We don't have to be physically putting these poor women in seats and telling them it's all going to be fine. You know, my son, the one that did the heart, thinks that we should have an airline called Air Mausoleum, and you just lie down on, you know, benches or pieces of plastic or something, and you just sleep your way through.
Oh, that would be nice, but I don't know why. For some reason, it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. I can't imagine.
Sure,
I said, you
yes.
have never been a parent, so you don't
That's
understand
right.
this.
Yes. Once you're a parent, you realize all rules often are thrown right out the window. You talk
right.
about the difference, you know, between boys and girls, and I know we have a friend. We always love to joke about her because when she had her first baby, she had a baby boy. And this woman is just a genius. She's absolutely brilliant. And she said, my son is not going to be involved with this. My son, we are not going to have this type of toy around. He's
oh.
not going to have guns. He's not going to have this. I'm just
uh-huh.
not going to do it. Well, guess what? That lasted for just almost no time at all. As soon as he could figure out what he wanted to do and he could move. And she said, boy, did I learn fast. He was a boy, every inch a boy. He wanted the guns. He wanted to have the trucks. She said,
amazing,
I gave dolls. He pitched them. He tore them up, you know, threw them out the window, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is this? What are you doing to this to me for? And you talk about how the way kids react and how if you try to put a pink ribbon in a boy's hair, he's probably going to take it off and eat it. And if it's a little girl, she will just crawl over to a mirror and preen and prim it to, oh, how pretty, and then she'll eat the ribbon.
That's right.
But I really like this about scouts. I really like this because you said if a parent becomes involved in scouting and teaches a group of brownies to bake cookies, the brownies will eat half of them before, you know, they get out to anyone.
Of course.
The Cub Scouts, however, will set fire to your oven, and while on a campout, cubs will wear the same underwear for 3 days, brownies will lose their underwear. And I said, uh-huh, I think I recall that in Girl Scouts.
Oh, isn't that? That's so true.
It's just the difference. I mean, it's just phenomenal, the differences between the boys and the girls. And that's a fact. And it's just nature.
Absolutely. My husband pointed out to me that the girls, when you're driving girls around to different events, they are usually fairly pleasant to their chauffeur who's ever driving. But if you put boys in the back seat of a car and then you make a comment, you know, you join, so to speak, the group, your sons will probably not talk to you for the rest of high school, because the deal is you're supposed to drive with eyes facing front. Do not get involved in any conversations in the back. And I have found that when I broke that rule, I wasn't accepted in the group at all, except to just make a lot of sandwiches whenever they were around. If you feed boys, they can usually be tamed for a little while,
yes.
At least.
Yes. I was talking to a woman that had two sons, two beautiful baby boys. I said, do you have stock in a grocery store, Jane? She said, what are you talking about? And I said, my dear, you have no idea. They're cute and cuddly right now, but you are going to find that these kids are going to be mammoth animals, and they will come in and they'll just growl. And if you don't have something to feed them, they are going to be just incorrigible. And she
That's
looked
very true. That
she
is your
she
obligation.
She sort of got a glazed look. They were only a year and a half.
Uh-oh.
You know, that is one of the advantages of being a mature woman. You can look at this and say, I'm so glad it's you, dear.
Oh,
that's why
yeah.
they've often said the grandparents have such a good time, because they get to spoil them and then send them home to mother.
They absolutely do. I'm enjoying, we have grandchildren from ages 17 down to 10 months. So
oh my goodness.
They're really scattered. Our sons did not become fathers that early, and I used to stand over them wringing my hands and saying, you know, was it something I said? Where are the grandchildren here? You know, was it that uncomfortable living in our house? And they just pat me on the shoulder like our positions are reversed, you know, and they just say, Mom, you know, we have things to do. We have to finish college. We have to, you know, get a good job. We have to pay back our student loans. And I'm thinking these flimsy excuses when all I want is just a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so they've taken their sweet time, but the results were so wonderful that, you know, I can't really complain about it.
Well, gals, for those of you listening, there is a chapter in this book, Absolutely Nothing to It, and it's all about how Joan, when she would go to the hospital, remember, she had five children, that was a mini vacation for her. She said, this was great, but hubby had to be at home, and I'm telling you, I was crying. I shared this with people. One section is that whenever she'd ask her husband about what had gone on, oh, nothing. Yet all the other women in the neighborhood were paying attention and fed her in information. And he was just exhausted. And the kids were happy to see Mom come home because they didn't want any more pizza for dinner, because it's all Dad had fixed with pizza, nothing else. And when you ask him, I love this, when you ask your husband about this wonderful time that you had had to just be
lounge.
Sort of taken care of, even though you were in the hospital, you ask him and he said, it was like I'd died and gone to hell. No hope glimmering in the distance that the dishes would ever be kept up with the meals. I found myself praying that I'd be sent on a business trip to the Congo. They deserve it.
That's right.
I mean, you really don't know. And you say there's nothing better for a wife than the opportunity to be missed, and nothing better for a husband than to miss her. And Joan, you've got a wonderful book here. And for those of you listening, if you wanted to give Mom a gift and you were wondering, gee, what can I give Mom? I think any woman would enjoy this. And if you've got a friend that's got a whole bunch of kids that just feels like she's going to go insane before they finally reach adulthood, she needs to have this book, Mom Knows Best. And Mother's Day is coming up. This would be just great. Joan, your website is joanwanderson.com, joanwanderson.com. You have written other books about angels, which they're just gorgeous. You've written the life story about Loretta Young, which is incredibly awesome. there are so many things that you have done that's just wonderful, but this one is light, it is funny, it is real, and I think every woman will relate to it. I want to thank you so much for being my guest today, and happy Mother's Day to you.
Oh, thank you, Donna, and the same to you. We'll just get a laugh out of this and be able to reminisce a little bit better.
I think so. That's what life is all about. If you can't laugh, you're going to end up crying a heck of a lot more than you want to, especially when you're a mom. Remember, mom does know best. JoanWAnderson.com. Check out her website. You'll fall in love with what she does. We're going to be back in just a moment. Thanks again, Joan. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. My second guest today, this is an hour dedicated to moms. Mother's Day is coming up, and this is another item that you may want to consider, especially if a mom has everything. My guest at this moment is Betsy Robinson. We're talking about conversations with mom. And on Betsy's cover of this book, she has three wonderful photographs in a row of her and her mom. And the subtitle of the book is An Aging Baby Boomer in Need of an Elder Writes to Her Dead Mother. Betsy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Donna.
Now, Betsy, you are a woman that has been involved with writing for so long. And this about your mom, I thought, what in the world is this going to be about? And you know, this was really a cute book.
Oh,
and it is a book where your mom, you start off where your mom has passed away in the hospital. And, of course, when a member of our family dies, and if you've been really, really close with your mother, it's a very deep emotional situation. But you and your mom had a real connection. And you write about it, and this is just really something you felt like you didn't have her to talk to like you did before. So that's how this book laid out. What inspired you to put this together?
Well, I when the recession imploded or exploded or however you want to say it, I lost my job at the age of 57. And for 2 years I was on unemployment, and I was going into my third year, and I actually had a really great time being on unemployment, but I was terrified. And I suddenly, one day I was sitting here and I was trying to write something else, fiction. And this book is fiction because my mother is dead and I write her letters and, you know, she writes back and it's not channeled. So, I mean, it's fiction, but it's based on an archive of letters and silly poetry and all kinds of different documents. Anyway, I was sitting here. And my first thought was, I just really want my mother. And I had started writing this novel, about 20 pages of it, where I thought, well, you know, if I write a novel, nobody has to know, and I can just taste it again. Because when you write fiction, you experience it. And I got 20 pages into it, and I suddenly thought, this isn't what I want to do. I want mom. And so I gave myself permission just to write letters to my mother and, you know, be very still and write her responses. And I was never going to show it to anyone, and I ended up writing a whole book. And it's not a very long book. It's a very short book, and it's a very funny book. But I'm also an editor. I mean, that's how I make my living, as a book editor. And so I can sort of, it's a little schizophrenic. I had written this thing, and then I read it with my editor persona, and I thought, you know, I think this might be something. So I gave it to a couple of people to read, and they had a huge positive reaction to it. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, all right, let me just jump off a cliff and do this. It's not the kind of thing I ever thought I would do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I found that it had so much thoughtfulness in it, but it also has good humor in it. And you, right at the beginning of the book, the very first chapter, it's about money, the very thing that you're talking about. And you're writing to your mom how you turned 60, and you can still wrap your legs around your neck doing your yoga and climb your four flights of stairs carrying 20 pounds of groceries without becoming breathless, but these aren't job qualifications that are going to help you to get employment. And you're going on and on. And then your mother's response is, "My dearest idiot daughter." My dearest idiot daughter, you're alive, you're extraordinarily healthy, and you can put your leg around your neck. For nearly 3 years, you've had a free ride with unemployment. You did exactly what you wanted. She goes on. Then the last sentence is, "Why are you bothering me? Suck it up and say thank you. I've got better things to do than listen to your self-involved bellyache and love. Your mother, who will always love you." And I thought, this is so much like what the way your mother would have responded. And that's what you are conveying. It's almost that you're having this wonderful conversation. And when you think about these interactions between mother and daughter, if you have a real good relationship, this is the kind of conversation that will go on. This is the thing. Get real, kid. You know, you're 60 years old. This is what you do. So it's it. And then you go into, what about the future? What about this and that? And she said, "I may be in spirit, but I'm not a mind reader." I mean, you can't. This is good. I mean, this is
great. Oh, thank you.
This is really, really wonderful.
Well, it came out of a very, very real relationship that I think we both earned. I had a very stormy childhood, and then when I became an adult, we actually became best friends and writing partners. We wrote together, and we paid our dues. You know, we fought like all get out. We went through the wars. My mother was not a terribly good mother when I was a kid. She was an alcoholic. You know, there was some serious stuff going on, but I think when you make the commitment as a child, of course, can't do this, but as adults, as two adults, I think we both decided we wanted each other. I didn't want to just, you know, say the hell with you and go away, you know, no matter. We both were willing to do the work. I mean, some people do this in a marriage. I did it with my mother for some reason. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we earned this relationship. So it went from, you know, me being sort of a resentful child, forced into being a caretaker, to me being an honored adult daughter, having the honor to help my mother at the end of her life. And there was a tremendous amount of humor. My mother was a hysterically funny person, and I can be pretty funny myself. And, you know, the humor between us was just black humor. So, you know, that's what I wanted. I wanted a good laugh when I started this book, and I laughed over and over again while I was writing it. I had a great time.
I think that you pick different topics. You had different titles of chapters, and they're short. This is not a real thick book. These are just very succinct and to the point. Worthiness and the law of attraction, shame. You went into this legacy. And, you know, there's so many other things here. But I really was interested in Chapter 6. You talked about confusion and addiction. And you say, it's Saturday, my taxes are paid, and you're going on and on and on. And there is this wonderful write-up that you put about how she was worried about the last days of her life. You're expressing all of your concerns. And she's expressing how she felt. Mm-hmm. And it's very poignant. section here because it gives a perspective that not many people would consider of someone that's going to make a shift and a change. And then gratitude. This one was cool because you said, "Dear Mom, I'm tight as a girdle. How do I accept love?" She says, "They're potato face. Just say thank you, then shut up."
I look at that all the time. Sometimes I do bibliomancy with this book just for myself. I just close my eyes, open it, and point. Over and over, one I get to that one. And you know, Donna, I actually did it for. I have such stage fright, which I for this moment I do not have. It's gone. And in preparation for talking to you, I did the bibliomancy and. My finger went right to, "You are being loved, sweetheart. Just try and accept it." And I thought, oh, my God, my heart just flooded. And I thought, oh, Donna Sebo's giving me this opportunity to talk about, this book. And I felt loved. So the book seems to give me what I, even though I wrote it, every time I look at it, it's new to me. And I think that was the reaction that my first reader had. When I gave her the manuscript, because I was so afraid to show it to anybody, I didn't want to put it out digitally. And when she came back to give it back to me, she sat on my couch gripping it. She didn't want to return it to me. And I thought, wow, something really personal is going on for her. And I feel that. You know, it's as if I didn't write this. I open it up when I need something, and I've been told that other people do as well.
When you have this little chapter on friends and family, and you're talking to Mom about Skype and Facebook, and her response is, "What's Facebook and Skype?"
Which she would say that even if she were alive.
What are you talking about? And I have to laugh because this goes on all the time. When technology moves forward, and the younger generation is just doing its real tap dance to it, as it is with every generation with technology, and they just think it's a piece of cake, and you say, "Duh, what? So anyway,
she came through in a very real way. You know, sometimes she told me she didn't have an answer, and sometimes she said, "You know, listen, I have that problem too, or I had it. Don't you got to figure that out yourself?" So, I mean, writing it was fiction based on true documents and experience, but it was reality for me anyway, deeper than any real reality.
Well, and you have something on grumpiness, and you're talking to your mom, and you say, it's really very depressing. It's raining, and you go on and on about grumpiness, and then you say, "Well, gee, I really miss you," and your mother's response is, "Maybe you ought to start drinking." It's
really enough for me. And I say that. It's just to rub it in my face, you know? You want a real problem?
and that was your response. You said, "Gee, thanks, I needed that. Talk to you tomorrow. It's Easter, you know, and we're supposed to celebrate it. Do you have holidays?" And she said, "Nope, every day is Easter. Love, your mumsy who loves you always. But I really love the line. Maybe you should start drinking."
She would say something like, yeah.
Yeah, and that's it's just a dry sense of humor.
Yeah.
And there's just all of this throughout your book. And I think that there are really those special moments that you share in this. And then with her response patterning, it has such a personal flavor to it that I think it really allows, with what you have written, a couple of perspectives. If someone maybe is having a challenge with their mother having passed over, they might be able to do something like this themselves and just allow that maybe this is a way that they could handle grief. And then on the other side, it's very down to earth. It is very realistic. It is humorous. And it is a demonstration of the difference between generations, the difference between an older person that's gone through so many loop-de-loops and dips and turns and spins in life, and here you are, and you're the daughter, and saying, I really don't know certain things, and then being flippant, saying, like you just said, I don't have the answer, or you need to go figure out something else to do, and just all kinds of little tidbits that you put in here. And I know that we're just about out of time, but this is something that I think anyone would enjoy. And I'll just share this one. You said, "Dear Mom, do you still celebrate Mother's Day? If so, I wish you a happy one. I've got 5 minutes until I have to wash out my hair dye. Do you have anything to tell me in 5 minutes? Love, Betsy." Dear Betsy, enjoy all 5 minutes. Enjoy your gray hairs as well as the brown. Enjoy the air, the plastic bag on your head, your ridiculousness, the ability to see your own ridiculousness. I'm so glad I gave birth to such a silly person. I enjoy you more than you could possibly know. As your friend in the park said, enjoy your marathon. Love, Mom. I think it's just lovely. Now,
Thank you.
If people want to get a copy of your book, they can go to your website, BetsyRobinson-Writer.com. That's Betsy, RobinsonWriter.com. And there will be more information about you. Betsy, it's been a joy having you as a guest. Congratulations on a book that I think is really honoring motherhood and the relationship of a daughter with her mother. And even though Mom may not be there in physical presence, she is in spirit, and it's just absolutely delightful. Thanks, Betsy, and I wish
you
great
Donna.
Success with your book.
Thank you so much.
This is Donna Sebo. Go to BetsyRobinson-Writer.com. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. A telephone line is open. Oh, I'm so glad to be back in the Pacific Northwest. I love Alaska, but, oh, I'm telling you, the roadies blooming here are just incredible, so I'm glad I'm not missing that. Here's the toll-free number if you're able to give us a buzz, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Now, I do want to mention to those of you who are listening in the state of Washington this Saturday, the day before Mother's Day, we are going to be presenting a class at the Ascension Into Light Foundation. I'm going to be doing flower readings. And this is something you don't hear about very often, and this is just a very special event. It's from 1 to 4 in the afternoon on Saturday. And what you do, you bring your own arrangement of a flower, a plant, whatever you like, and I will stay out of the room until after everybody is pretty much in, and then I will read the flowers without knowing who they belong to. And it is something that is so much fun. I was taught this years ago. There's a small fee of $25. Go to my website, DelphiInternational.com, to find out more information. The number for the Ascension Into Light Foundation is there, and you will be able to call them directly if you'd like to make a reservation for the class. Now, Mother's Day is coming up, and if you wanted to do something special for Mom, and, you know, moms usually appreciate thoughtfulness, period. And I was visiting with a friend when I was in Alaska. We've known each other for so many years. And she's had children. And she said, one of the things that is most important to me is being appreciated. That means more to me than having someone drop off a Cadillac in my front driveway. And you may say, whoa, wait a minute. Isn't that a little bit of an exaggeration? I don't think so. I think any of us, when we are appreciated, it means a lot. And for moms especially, because lots of times they just don't get any appreciation to speak of. So Mother's Day, that's why it started, so that this could be a recognition of the special mom in your life. Well, if she's on a diet and you'd love to fix something deliciously chocolatey, I've got a recipe that's absolutely marvelous. Now, I've got it. I'm going to give you both aspects of the recipe because these are ooey gooey peanut butter stuffed chocolate cupcakes. But then there's also just a plain chocolate cupcake recipe that you can do. So, and I've got a glaze to go on it. So let me give this to you quickly because it's only 90 calories a cupcake. Can you believe that? That's right, 90 calories a cupcake. So if mom's been watching her food program, you don't want to sabotage her, so why not fix something that's yummy and delicious that she's going to be able to eat and really enjoy. This is a great recipe to have. Now what you're going to need is a quarter of a cup plus 2 tablespoons of cocoa powder, quarter of a cup plus 2 tablespoons of cocoa powder, a half a cup of hot water, half a cup of hot water, 3/4 of a cup of granulated no-calorie sweetener, like a Splenda, 2 tablespoons of brown sugar, 1/3 cup of low-fat milk. You're going to need 1.5 teaspoons of vanilla extract, 1 egg, room temperature, please, 1/2 cup of light mayonnaise, 1 cup of all-purpose flour, 1 teaspoon of baking powder, and 1 teaspoon baking soda. Now, this recipe is so simple. You're going to preheat your oven to 325 degrees. It might be a good idea if you line the muffin cups with some liners. And then you might want to spray the muffin cups with a little of your nonstick cooking spray. Then you want to take your cocoa, put it in a large bowl, add the hot water, and you want to whisk it until it's smooth. Then you put in your sweetener, whisk that in so it's well blended. Then you add your brown sugar, your milk, your vanilla, your egg, and mayonnaise, and whisk that until it's smooth. If you're lazy like me, you use a beater. And then you gradually sift in your flour, baking soda, baking powder, and then you just stir that. You don't want to whip that. You just stir that until it's mixed nicely. And you want to take and scoop out 1/4 cup of batter into each muffin cup, and it'll bake 13 minutes. And you test it, obviously, with a toothpick to make sure the center comes out clean. Now, here is a glaze that you can fix. It's absolutely going to be wonderful on top of this. You're going to take 3 tablespoons of semi-sweet chocolate chips, put it in a microwave-safe bowl. You add 1/4 cup of non-fat, 1/2 and 1/2, and 3/4 cup of granulated no-calorie sweetener, just like Splenda. Place it in your microwave, heat it for a minute. And if you don't want to use a microwave, then just use the saucepan on top of your stove on lower heat. Just mix it. And then you want to add 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla. Stir until the chocolate chips are melted and everything is silky smooth. And then you are going to probably want to use a hand mixer for this. You want on a low speed, or you can use a whisk. Beat in 1/2 cup of confectionery sugar. You want to sift it before you measure it, 1/2 cup. And then you mix that until smooth, and then you sift in 1/3 cup of cocoa powder. Beat it again until it's nice and smooth. Now, this glaze will thicken as it cools, so if you want it thin so that you can just spoon it over and just put that delicious chocolatey glaze on it. Each cupcake is only 90 calories, so mom could have 2 if she wanted to. Now, if you want to have the ooey-gooey peanut butter ones, you use both of the recipes I gave you, the chocolate cupcakes and the glaze. You're going to need 2 tablespoons of creamy peanut butter, 2 tablespoons of light cream cheese. All of this has to be at room temperature. 2 tablespoons of your no-calorie sweetener. It's about equivalent to about 3 packets of sweetener. And then 1/3 cup of light whipped frosting or topping that you get in the store. And once the glaze has been made, once the cupcakes have cooled, what you're going to do is stir together your peanut butter, your cream cheese, and your sweetener. Gently fold in your whipped topping, and then you take an apple core. You may remove a plug from the center of each cupcake. Fill each cupcake with about 1.5 teaspoons of your peanut butter mixture, and then frost it with a chocolate glaze. That gives you a different one. That's yum. This is even something that kids might enjoy. Everybody can enjoy it without adding inches to the waistline. Well, this is Donna Siebel back in the beautiful Pacific Northwest where the sun is actually shining and the flowers are blooming with just like they're ready to bust the buttons. So I'm so delighted that you've been with me today. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life is to be lived in the moment. Mother's Day is coming up. Don't forget your mom. And remember always that you are someone that can light up this world in a very special way. Don't be afraid to share that light, because it's needed, big time. This is Donna Sebo. Talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here at BBS Radio at our new show time. And tomorrow, we're going to be talking about lost worlds in America. Don't miss this. Frank Joseph is going to be my guest. See you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.